Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome back to Snacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howe. We have Ricardo on the board, Greg Pappas in the studio, SP Futures up 16, NASDAQ Futures up 65. We're going to try for 2 days in a row here. We have some earnings that have come out. We've got NVIDIA tonight, which is a big one. Talk about that with Greg in a little bit. Do we have Carl? Carl, are you with us? I don't hear his dulcet tones. There he is. There you are.
I was going to say, that be your end. I most certainly do.
Well, we get it together here. We got, you know, a new man on the board, but he's one of our fastest learners ever. So we got good stuff there.
Well, you know, I mean, so recently a few times it's been on my end, but this time I knew it was right. So there you go.
Well, there you go. I love it when you know you're right. You know, it happens once in a while.
Every now and then, and I'm never wrong. You know, the funny that you bring up the NVIDIA thing. You know, and of course, everybody's looking for that one tonight, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's the, you know, it's the 900-pound gorilla in the room. There is this, and their stock, you know, have been down a little bit, right? They've had a little bit of a dip, and then, boy, the last day or two, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, here we go again. Although, at this point, if you're looking at candles, it's inside, okay? Because it was, you know, it was Friday was not a good day for them, to put it mildly.
Well, they're down 80, up 20. So what does that get?
Right, I'm just saying, you know, yeah. But here's the thing that I keep coming back to with that entire hype driven machine when it comes to the, you know, the AI stuff, which is of course what's all coming from. Is that commoditization never leads to expanding margins. Never.
Well, no, unless you got a patent or something like you in the drug industry.
Well, hey, listen, just 30-second example. You want to talk about some of the amusing things that come out of patents. So I have a trailer I converted to an RV, and my daughter has her camper van, which is basically the same thing except smaller and self-contained, right? And one of the challenges with those things is that when it gets colder, you know, there's this thing called heat that most of us like. Air conditioning, not so tough. You know, you have to have a generator to run that. But off-grid heat, there's several options. The most common is propane. But there's a company called Webasto that's been around forever out of Germany that makes diesel-fired heaters. Okay?
Okay.
They had a patent on these things. They are unbelievably nice. They're real common in boats, which, of course, you know, if you're sailing or something, you've got a heat issue, and you've also got a power problem because you don't happen to have a whole lot of it running around unless you're running a generator, which in a boat, in a sailboat particularly, you'd probably rather not because you don't have an engine going. So anyway, these things are quite popular, but they're very proud of them, okay? They're not very complicated devices. It's essentially a fan and a combustion chamber. so $1,000 for quite a long time. Little computer control board and a fan and a combustion chamber. It's basically all they are. Glow plug for ignition. Well, patent ran out. Guess how much they cost now?
$500, $300.
Oh no!
More?
You can have $120.
Really?
Needless to say, there is now one in both my RV.
Yeah, and but you don't have that
Sarah's truck.
You don't have that German. Probably somebody other than German craftsman making it. Probably got some schlump making it.
Well, actually, it's rather amusing because the they're all called Chinese diesel heaters. Okay. And they're all over the place. I mean, Amazon's got about 50 different, so-called brands. They're all exactly identical. No differences between them at all, actually, if you open them up and look. And the amusing part of it is that if you buy one, when it comes in, guess where the source is for all the pieces?
The German guy?
Uh-huh. It's Germany. Now, the electronics, are all Chinese, right? Because it does have a little controller board. So, I mean, and it's astounding to me that the with the electronics, these things are just $100. Okay? Because there really is some electronics in there, to keep it from exploding or burning your place down and whatever have you. I mean, there is some control required by it. That's one of the things about patents. And and it's the abuse of that system, and the lack of the willingness to prosecute people who abuse it, specifically in the medical industry, that leads to a lot of our problems. And nobody goes to jail unless you're on the wrong side of ginning up something completely ridiculous. I saw two things. There were two things that happened yesterday that I think were poster children for this. And how we haven't gotten a revolt out of this in the United States so far, I'm awestruck by the fact that it hasn't happened.
Because everybody's trying to make ends meet.
Well,
doesn't have time to revolt.
I get that, but you know what? If you don't, you're not only not going to make ends meet, you're going to be hungry at the same time you have everything else, right?
So what is my revolt? I get to vote for Tweedledum or Tweedledee. That's my revolt.
Well, that's the problem. Right, is that the Tweedledum and Tweedledee are both crooked as blankety blank and aren't going to do anything to actually solve any of these problems.
How can you get the crook to go after the other crooks?
The crook has to fear being severely screwed, aka dead, if he doesn't do.
By the way, just I don't know if I mentioned this to you. Don't lose your train of thought because I'm going to, as usual, interrupt and do something stupid. My attorney buddies are telling me they're defending all kinds of people now, like multiple people, and these PPP loans, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but
a lot of them were fraud.
But what I'm saying is, one guy has three or four people the people made application, and then I think they must have dropped it or something. But on the initial application, everything in there wasn't exactly true, but they never got a dime. And does anybody... Now, of course, you can be one of these guys. Anytime you put something down in a federal application, if it's not 100% true, you're breaking the law. Can't they waste their time on people who actually got the money?
Well, you would think, but those people probably were preferred by someone, and so, they're not going to go after them.
At some point, we've got to get our people to spend all their time, these 25-year-old morons, going after the lowest-hanging fruit. I mean, you got to go after somebody who actually stole something.
Chief, there's an old saying, and it's absolutely true, which is that whatever the problem is, solving 80% of it is cheap, easy, and fast. Okay? The other 20% is exponentially harder. Now, which which part of it would you like to go after?
Well, I mean,
the answer in our government is always we go after the 20%. Ignore the 80%. Okay, which not only wastes all the money, doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, but...
Because my first question is, why are they going for her? She didn't get... You tell me all about it. He goes, no, she lied in her application. I said, first of all, I explained the process to him.
Right.
So, you make an application, you get the loan, but it's only a loan. I mean, even if you... because we got one of these, because we were totally shut down. Got very little bit of dough, very little bit, because my brother's the most honest man on earth. Not that I would have been different, I'm not, but that was the oddest law ever. Wait, now you got me going here. Because it was supposed to be, 90% salaries? Then they realized that so many people cheated on the application that they kept expanding what you could put on there so everybody didn't end up being a crook. So it ended up being like 20% could be rent and 5% something else. It ended up being somewhere like 70 or 75% salaries. So anybody who was honest could actually have applied for like 25% more initially, but nobody did if you were honest. All right, so, but the, what I'm saying is it's, you applied for it, you maybe got approved, but you got approved for a loan that you had to pay back. All right, so even if you sort of lied on that and you paid the loan back, nope, with interest, nobody's harmed. But the next part was you had to explain to them in yet another piece of paper that you had, in fact, used all the money exactly like they told you that you had to use it. And then you applied for the loan to be forgiven. There's no harm to anybody unless you lied on that one and got the loan forgiven. If you just paid the money back, who cares?
Well, yeah, but look at... Okay, so... Let's just look at the other side of this, though, which is the malicious use of systems, the legal system, as a punishment tool against people you don't like.
Oh, yeah.
And then for everybody else, for people you do like, they can violate the law with impunity. Okay? And there is no law.
There is no law.
Because none of them go to jail. All right. So two quick examples. All right. Everybody has an opinion about Trump and the Stormy Daniels thing, right? So, you know, opening arguments started up yesterday. And as it turns out, now I didn't realize this until I actually listened to a little bit of this thing. So the argument is that false business records were made. Trump was responsible for that. That's a misdemeanor. And by the way, having good, you know, accurate business records, hey, there's probably a reason to have a law for that, because you end up screwing people when you lie in business records to some degree, all right? Even though the fraud itself is or should be separately punishable if someone gets harmed.
Well,
right?
what the harm is usually, if it's fraud there, you're doing it because you're not paying enough taxes or something.
Well, I understand. I mean, you know, but like I said, I mean, fraud usually, standing alone, if somebody gets screwed, has a separate reason to come after you, all right? So, but... But, you know, I'm sort of okay with the idea of a, you know, misdemeanor offense, just simply lying in business records, all right? I'm kind of okay with
that.
Well,
but it's not...
But that's not... No, no,
okay,
no.
But even if it's a misdemeanor, I'm saying even if it's a misdemeanor, you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars to defend yourself. That's the crime against you if you're an individual.
Right. But here's where it gets interesting. So if, however... That ends up being an element of a fraud against someone else in some way, now that can be elevated to a felony, and that's what they're going after him under. Okay, here's the problem with this.
Well, okay, are they saying that he gave her this money and then he deducted it somehow?
They're saying that he gave her this money and he lied about it being hush money, that it was, that he lied in that he claimed
lied
it was
to who?
Legal expense to Cohen, that he claimed that it was a legal expense.
Okay, so he deducted it.
Yeah, well, okay, he's not, so far as I'm aware, there is not an argument that he committed tax fraud, which it was my argument when this whole thing started, is that if in fact he deducted it as legal expenses for his companies and that's not what it was, settlements are not deductible to the person paying them. Okay.
Well, he might have maybe deducted it as part of a campaign thing. And that, which,
well,
you don't pay taxes on. So that still, it's kind of weird.
Right. Well, I'm saying that there's, you know, but those. So my originally, when I heard about this way, way back when, I said, you know, there might actually be an argument here that there's a tax fraud component to this. And if so, you know, hey, listen, if you're committing tax evasion and you get busted, I think you absolutely... I mean, I pay my taxes, so I get kind of pissed.
Quick question. Is hush money paid to you income? Did she have to pay income on it?
Well, now that depends. A legal settlement to you for harm that was done to you is not taxable.
Right, but this was not... This wasn't through the courts,
it gets sticky there, right? All right, so anyway... So this is supposedly the felony, and the reason for doing this was to prevent him from being outed as a serial philanderer and everything else during the campaign, all right? In other words, the element of the fraud was to attempt to help him get elected as president of the United States. Okay. Now, That would be fine, except the payment was made in 2017. The election was over.
Yeah. It's
So explain to me how I commit a fraud. All right, but help me.
Okay, now that you open this up, you do like you always do. You give me about 100 questions. Suppose I'm running for alderman. God, I can't imagine me. Wait, suppose I'm running for alderman, and I go to some party, and unfortunately, you know, some group is giving me a lot of money, makes me drink a couple of shots, or nobody makes you drink anything. And on the way home, I bump into somebody's rear end, just slightly. The guy goes, "Oh, you're alderman chief running for alderman." And I said, "Well, doesn't look like I did much damage. Here's like 10 Benjamins, and we'll forget this thing ever happened." And the guy goes, "Okay." Now, what exactly is that transaction? I mean, I'm not going to deduct it at all. It's not a legal settlement, but is it really income to him? He's got to fix his car. I mean, what is that? I mean, is Trump something like that, or what is it?
Well, I think that's kind of the, you know.
If it is, what's the difference?
Well, and this is so that's the laughability on the one side, okay, from my point of view, all right, is that this is supposedly a serious felony, and yet the event that is claimed to be the felony, which is essentially influence peddling, okay, in the context of an election, couldn't have actually created the influence because it happened after the election was over.
Well, if the next day I walk back to the campaign and I pull $1,000 out of petty cash and say it was for some kind of expense, I would get how that could be a problem. I don't know how exactly I'm hurting, but that...
Okay, so the false statements thing, okay, but that's a misdemeanor.
Okay.
Okay. In order for it to be a felony, it has to have had a corrupted... It has to not only have had a corrupting purpose, but served to... influence an element of corruption. All right, the claimed element of corruption was influencing the outcome of the election for himself, of course, you know, because he wanted to win.
I thought he paid her off before the campaign.
Well, no, there were two instances here regarding the bimbo stuff. All right, the one that they charged him under was a payment made in 2017.
Everybody remembers the first one, not the second one, right?
Well, I understand that, but that one is, he's not charged on that one.
Well, why did he pay her again?
I don't know exactly how this all, you know, God, it's been, what, you know, 6-7 years now, yeah. Right? I mean, I wrote a lot of this on a lot of this stuff at the time it all happened. I thought they charged him under the original
payment. That's what I thought, too.
During the campaign. Okay, now
that's
one,
the one that everybody knows about.
Well, I understand that. And that one, I mean, at least I can defend the logic. I still may think it's BS, but at least I can defend the logic. This other one, I can't, there's no logic, okay? And when I heard this, I was like, what? Excuse me? You did what? Okay, so there's that. The second one just popped up yesterday on X, and I'm trying to verify this. I need to find somebody that has a Tesla. I don't care which one it is. I'm the, you know, Model 3, Model Y, whatever. Just not an S, because the S is much older and is different technology. So I want one of the current ones. There is a thread going around on X from a guy who claims that their odometers are deliberately overstating driven miles.
Why would you do that?
Well, it makes your range look better, for one
okay.
thing.
Okay, all right.
Number two... if the person leased the car, they get screwed, okay, bad, potentially with a mileage overage, which, by the way, if they're leased through Tesla, that's directly financially profitable to them. Number three, it also could
how bad could it be? If I'm driving from here to Milwaukee, Chief, which is 90 miles, and it says I just went 120, how am I not going to notice it?
Well, Chief, that's exactly it. I mean, we're talking, all right, so there is a standard for this. And by the way, that implicates a federal criminal statute. Odometer fraud is a big deal, okay?
Yeah, but usually it's for pulling them back, not for pushing them forward.
Well, I understand that, but you know, but selling a vehicle that you know has an inaccurate odometer without checking that box on the title is a crime.
All right, I'm trying to, as usual, I'm putting the numbers together here, and you're making me think. Let me get this straight. If I get... a rental car. So I got to buy a car, Tesla or otherwise. And from what I understand from people I used to know in the industry, Carl, the hardest part about making money renting cars is buying the right cars and not having them depreciate so much that when you sell them, you don't lose that much. So I'm trying to think of the break even here. If I have a car that somebody's driving, and over the 10,000 miles they put on it, which probably sell it by then, the rental car, it's actually only 8, and maybe you can get 20% more mileage out of those guys, but then when I go to sell it, unless I pull it back to where it ought to be, I'm selling a car with a lot more mileage, says it's got a lot more mileage on it than it has, which is, you're going to lose on the other end, probably not as much, but you're going to lose something.
Yeah, well, this is the thing that I think is interesting about this.
Kevin says that the statute of limitations expired on the first payment for Trump.
All right. Well, that's why they went after him on the second one. Right. That actually, you know, hey, statute of limitations is a bitch, right? Here's the thing that I think is interesting about this. First off, I. You know, my ears perked up when I first saw this. And the second thing is, you can't possibly be serious that somebody would be insane enough to... optical encoders are pretty simple stuff, right? I mean, it used to be that your odometer was a gear-driven thing off your transmission. Nowadays, it's all done with an optical encoder because it's all electronic. But the V-dub that my daughter has actually records the miles driven from that, which is the same sensor, by the way, that runs your speedometer, records the miles driven both in the cluster and in the ECU. So if you try to cheat by changing the clusters in the vehicle, it will bust you when somebody puts a scanner on it. Okay? So I don't know if all the vehicles do that. I don't know if I have a Suburban. I don't know if the GM has, you know, has a separate copy in the two places, because I remember
having to change my speedometer cable.
Yeah, well, it used to be a cable that was in the, you know, that went into the back of the cluster, right? Yeah. Off the transmission. All right, so but this is one of those things that I'm just blown away by this. So what I put out there is I said, look, you know, this is easy enough to test. I will go measure out using a GPS and using both of my vehicles, say a 20-mile section of highway here that's really easy. I got an on-ramp here and I got a rest area on the other end, right? And I'll drive it, you drive it. Each of us brings a Confederate, so there's no games being played. We'll zero the tripodometer. We'll take photographs of this, of the actual odometer on the car. We'll drive the thing side by side, go to the other end. We got the mile marker posts as well. And you know what? If this is off by more than a tenth, all right, which is, you know, the allowed tolerance is about 4%, which makes some sense because it's about one and a half for the tires, okay, just from the wear. It's about 1.5%.
Well, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, especially if you put bigger tires on, it's even more so.
Well, from new tires to fully worn, okay, on an average automobile, it's about 1.5%. And if you're off by that, well, you know, nobody cares. If you're off by 20 or 30%, oh, my God.
Yeah.
All right? And the thing is that, I mean, this should be run to ground. But the thing is, 10 years ago, Chief, if somebody had said this to me, I would have looked at them and said, you're from Mars. Yeah, okay, nobody would have the audacity to try to pull something like that. Now I actually believe it might be true.
Remember the big lie. It has to come from somebody they would never believe would lie. It has to be so outrageous that nobody would think anybody would think of it.
I'm just, and I look at all the different things going on, you know, with the market right now. All these people, what's happening with insurance and everything else. And you know, how stocks are just levitating on air.
We got a dash, Carl. But I tell you what, on Friday, let's pick this up because I want to do. I've been trying to do the last couple of weeks, and I do it better with you than I seem like I do with anybody else. I'm trying to tie together all the stuff about income and expenses and who's making the money and who isn't. What about this healthcare? It's absolutely not all the stuff we normally talk about, but how much money is going in there? And all of a sudden, if it became competitive and all those people weren't paid that much, what would happen? And Let's try.
See, if you'd have a short-term depression, but it would be the best thing that ever happened in this country.
Well, You know what? I think that's probably, you're probably right, but I'm trying to find a way we can do it without that, but I'm not so sure there is.
Carol, you can't. It's the disruption would be too much.
Well, let's talk about it on Friday because we don't have any labor numbers. S&P Futures up 12, NASDAQ Futures up 48. Be right back, Mr. Joel and Conan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, and what big Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. We have Ricardo on the board. We have Greg Pappas here as well. We have S&P futures up 12. We're trying to do 2 days in a row. We were up a little more. But the big earnings, tonight's the big, well, one of the big ones. NVIDIA's coming out. NVIDIA's been shaking the market up a little bit. So is this SMCI, which didn't come back yesterday, even though they were down $200 on Friday. They were actually down again yesterday when NVIDIA was up. Dow futures are up 82. So far, the earnings that come out this morning, GMs were good. They're up $1.82, 45.03. Novartis were good as well in the drug companies. So we've got some that are coming out better than expected. We'll see if that keeps going. Over in Europe, DAX up 208. That's over 1%. Again, these guys are all bouncing back. A lot of this has to do with, I think, and this is one man's opinion, the strike that the Israelis did on Iran. I think people were judged to not be inflammatory. It was more of a message than a strike. One man's opinion, and the market seems to be a lot more relieved on that. Now, let's hope that that's the case. FTSE up 39.5%, CAC up 60.75%. So that's why you saw gold down yesterday and things like that. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 113.3%, Hang Seng up again, another 317, that's another 2%. They're way up to 16,828. Shanghai down 22, over at 0.7. One of these days, somebody's going to have to tell me why these things are going up and down the same day differently, but they are. Yesterday, again, we were pretty much way up. Dow Jones up 253, S&P up 43, NASDAQ up 169. So S&P made back almost all the day before. NASDAQ made back about half of it. Bonds unchanged at 4.63, so still high. Bund unchanged, 2.50. Japan down a percentage basis, 0.86. We have oil down 39 cents, 81.51, so the oil thing has cooled off a hair or two. Brent down 35 cents, 86.65. Natural gas unchanged, 180. RBOB down 2 cents, 266. We've got gold down again, another 30 bucks, 23.15, so a long way from that 2400 number. Silver down another 27 cents, 26.97. Nobody wants this now that evidently we're not going to have a full-blown war, at least today. Copper down 6 cents, 441. We've got the U.S. dollar, which has been very strong. Still 106.7 against the euro, so pretty strong. Same thing with the pound, 123. We were 127 for a long time, so it's down about 3%. The pound is against the dollar. We have Bitcoin down 337, 66,059. A lot of stuff there. What do you guys got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 a.m. right here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 59 degrees Fahrenheit with a high of 59 degrees Fahrenheit as well. Cloudy skies this morning, followed by scattered showers and thunderstorms during the afternoon. Gusty winds and small hail are possible. Winds southwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour, and chance of rain of 40%. And in Phoenix, it's at 96 Fahrenheit right now with a high of 96. It's very, very sunny, and the winds south-southeast are at 10 to 15 miles per hour. On the traffic, we got inbound Kennedy from Monroe's at 17 minutes, inbound Edens from Lane Cook at 37 minutes, inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 36 minutes, inbound Dan Ryan from 95th is going to be 17 minutes, and then Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is going to be another 27 minutes. On the sports in the NBA, we see the Suns versus the Timberwolves are today at 6:30 p.m. at the Target Center in Minneapolis. Onto MLB, the Sox lost to the Twins yesterday 7-0 in Minnesota, and the Diamondbacks also lost to the Cardinals in St. Louis 5-3. And I also got a couple of news right here for you. The Chicago Bears, actually, they're going to be announcing plans for a new stadium and additional green open space on Museum campus on Wednesday, April 24th. That's tomorrow, and it's going to be right in the parking lot of where they are right now. That's all I got for you, Hepe.
Let's just hope that plan doesn't go too far. Do we have Joel?
Yes, we do.
Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How'd my boy Aaron do last week? He
was good. He was real good.
Okay. All right. Good, good, good. So
he's kind of he's a believer. He's a believer in, like, the numbers and everything in the economy.
Well, I mean, are you?
No.
So you don't think the economy is doing that well?
No.
Okay.
I think it is. It is for... It is for some number of people, and it's doing so well for them that the numbers are overrunning the rest of the people.
I mean, there's definitely the haves and the have-nots, and that disparity is definitely increasing. So I won't disagree with that.
I just hope it's not. I hope he's right and not me. It almost seems to me like it's the 20s, where so many people are in recession and depression, nobody cares about them because there's so much money awash in the top end.
Now, well, if you go on Twitter, everyone's doing fine.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's because what do you think the samples are there, people that are on Twitter versus other?
All right, Chief. All right. I think this is a big day for the market.
I did. So what do you think? What do you think NVIDIA is going to do tonight?
What do I think NVIDIA is? Don't they need a report later in the cycle?
I thought they were. Somebody said they were tonight, Greg. Maybe not.
No. Yeah, maybe you're thinking about Tesla.
Maybe it's Tesla.
No, NVIDIA is a later cycle report. Nice rebound in NVIDIA. I'll just go, nice rebound in the market yesterday. I think today is just a really important day. You have a six-day losing streak, right? The market really loses a lot of momentum. You did have the chaos at the end of last week in Israel and Iran, always at just a flammable situation. And we battled back, and yesterday was a day where, the bears could have, take that low, get us under 5K. And it looked, early afternoon we were going to. The bulls battled back, and we even got above Friday's highs. So there's still the buy the dippers out there. They reset from different levels. But today we're up 13.5. You got some decent earnings reports. You got your leaders in the green set for Apple. iPhone's down in China, down 19%. The market seems to be ignoring that. But if the bulls can fend off the bears again, you're looking at a 2 or 3 month bottom here that you hit at the end of last week. So market sentiment, everyone gets super bullish at 5,300. We're going to 5,500. Get down to 5,000. Everyone's licking their chops for 4,800. So I'd love to see us hold the gains today. The level that we're trading at basis the S&P futures right now, 5,060, is a weekly swing level for me. We exceeded it yesterday, but we didn't close above it. So important day for the bulls here, and they're off to a good overnight start.
Well, Joel, I really do believe. I mean, I'm not. I mean, I'm so concerned on this Middle East stuff. I thought what the Israelis did was pretty close to genius. Basically, minimal damage. We can get through. Here's a message. And I think that's. I hope and think that that's cooled off a little bit. At least the direct confrontations, at least. Do you think that's part of?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to really temper my comments on this thing. But what my original thesis was, I discussed it, you know, with my wife and my close friends, is I didn't think Israel was going to do anything. And the reason I didn't think they were going to do anything is that they can't spread themselves too thin.
Right, I agree.
And I thought that, you know, the engagement that they, you know, they did, if they start to expose themselves and more than Gaza and more than what's already going on, then that's going to weaken their internal defenses. And so in essence, you know, I was wrong. They did strike back. But when you look at it in, you know, in the big picture, and I heard what you said before I came on, it was a limited engagement. So it's just an unbelievable situation. If you want to talk on a global macro situation, then you wouldn't own any stock, and you wouldn't own anything, and you would be, you know, short the world. But the way this market works, the way the, you know, it's predicated, it's, you know, it's basically rigged to go up, and that's what it does. So very confusing market, but you are coming into earnings season, right? That's the most important thing. Fundamentals, right? Everyone thinks the economy is not doing well. Look at GM today.
Yeah, they look good.
Yep. You know, up two sticks, near, you know, a buck off the high of the move. Well, the whole EV thing is, you know, Tesla going in the opposite direction. So, man, there's pocket. I would say overall, you know, your assessment might be right, but there's just pockets of strength in the economy right now. Whether it's true or not, GM's reflecting it in its earnings, and it's trading higher today. So
but Joel, here's my I would agree with you that GM is doing fine. My concern is that their prices are what, 40% higher than they were 4 years ago, and I look at virtually all the people I know will never be able to afford a new car. Yet GM is fat and happy because they're selling 20% less cars at 40% more money. Now, is I look at that, to me, that's horrendous. And yet, for GM, it's good. And I wish I was long GM today. I mean, I you know, it's hard for me to be both, be long all this stuff for my clients because I think they're going up like you. Yet on the other hand, I know this is not the direction we want to go. I mean, to me, I have a problem with that.
You know, you like to say price don't lie. You're right. I mean, there's more, you know, I haven't scoured the report yet, but there are, you know, there are efficiencies. I mean, the, you know, people are getting paid more money, right? I mean,
some are.
The workers, the big strike, right? When this thing sank under $30, they're going to hell in a handbasket, and you had a great contrarian play there. But you know, GM really hasn't been like your leader, right? And your leaders have been, you know, your NVIDIA's, your Microsoft's, Google. You know, Google just quietly, you know, sneaks back to, all-time highs here, just a couple bucks off it. The Dow just showed a lot of strength even, you know, at the end. So you just can't kill this market if there's
rotation. The Dow is one stock in the last 2 weeks. It's United Healthcare. They weren't in the Dow, the Dow wouldn't even be up.
Well, also, I mean, you know, look at your Goldman Sachs, too,
yeah.
Chief.
Okay,
I mean,
yeah. I'm saying, so let me get this straight. People in the medical profession are making a bunch of money, and Goldman Sachs is making a lot of dough. Tell me how that affects me.
How does that affect you?
Well, I'd love to have the stocks. Other than that, how does that affect me? To the positive.
Yes. UNH is on a rebound, right, because of a lot of the bad news that it's had, and it's a volatile stock. But, you know, Goldman Sachs is a different story, right? I mean, who do they cater to? And this alludes to your point. They cater to the higher wealth population. So, Morgan Stanley's a little bit different a story. They, came out with the investigation news, knocked the thing down to 85. Now it's back up at 92. It's just hard to shake the buy the dip mentality. I think people are coming to the realization that rates are going to be stable. They're not going lower. And CNBC, rates may be going higher. Rates are staying the same, folks. I hate to tell you this, but we're not going down to 2% and we're not going to 7%. I would not be surprised if I'm on this show in 5 years. I hope I'm around in 5 years. That we're at 4%. We're at 4.5%. You just got to have stability. You got to let these banks work through all these bad loans. Got to see what's going to happen in the commercial real estate market. And I say, everyone, higher for longer. Oh, no. 5-6 cuts this year. Stable for longer. And that's when that helps out to people with your fixed income and what's not.
When you say stable, last question. Are you talking 10-year as well?
Yeah.
So you think 5 years? No, short term will be 1% higher than 10-year.
Yeah.
Really? That's interesting. Next week, let's take that apart a little bit. That's interesting. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that, but I know you got a dash. Thanks, buddy.
Okay.
SP Futures up 11, as if he's up 47. I don't know if we have Kenny or not. If we don't, Carl hung around, so we'll know in about a second. We're going to go a quick break.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Money. Get away. Stocks and jocks time. Well, this week here's up 10. Nancy here's up 44. I think we have Carl back. Kenny's off a couple of weeks. I think he had a little bit of a health issue that I think he's coming through pretty well. Kenny's one of our favorite guys, and we wish him all the best. Carl, you back, bud?
I am still here.
Thank you for hanging around, but I should have let you know that Kenny said 2 weeks, but then he said he wasn't positive the second week, so whatever. It was my fault. I should have tracked him down, but again, we wish him the best. What do you make of this Vegas rail line after all these years?
Oh my God. Well, look, let's let's just put this all back to where it really goes, which is this insanity with EVs. Okay, of all sorts, getting cars off the road. We can't use carbon-based fuels, sir.
Right.
By the way, the whole reason we have a society is carbon-based fuels, whether you like it or not. I mean, you may not like that, but it's the truth. And in fact, without them, you're literally living in a straw hut. And you're just going to have to bundle up and put some more clothes on because you can't burn any wood either. Because that's carbon. So, the inherent fraud, and it's what it is. It's the right word. there are calculations out there, and I've looked at them, and they appear to be about right, that for every electric-powered vehicle that you put on the road, you are stealing from the general public $50,000. Okay? Now, think about that. That's, and by the way, $7,500 of that is a direct tax credit. Okay, that's direct money.
Well, wait, Carl, I just got a big flash here in my news thing. Somebody says Bitcoin's going to 420,000. So should we run out and buy our Bitcoin while we're still on the air?
Yeah, okay. Bitcoin is going to zero. I'm just not sure precisely when. Good God, you know, tulips are going to a million.
Yeah. At least, right. At least you got a tulip with the tulip. You don't
well, at least you could look at them. Yeah. I mean, they were pretty, right? I mean, that was the, you know.
Well, that was the whole thing.
You know, well, it was the whole thing.
They were originally from Turkey, right? And people from Holland wanted them, and they were so valuable, they started buying them.
It's like every other fad. Show me utility value. It's the argument that I keep getting into with people that are always, you know, that are gold bugs. Okay, which is that, and yet gold does have utility value, although much less than it used to. That gold used to be the preferred material to make dental stuff out of.
I got one of those. I got a gold crown.
Well, yeah, because it's an extremely stable metal, and its expansion coefficient is reasonably close to the tissues in the body, which, by the way, that's a huge deal. Otherwise, it all breaks up, right? Yep. I mean, you know, because you drink cold things, you eat hot things, whatever. But nowadays, the composites are actually a better match. Okay, so that's and it's the expansion coefficient that is actually the gating factor in terms of long term sustainability in a biological system, because obviously if it breaks up and breaks the bonds that hold it to whatever it's put on, well, that's bad. But that that used to be one of the big uses. But gold has a significant utility value in that all the interconnections that are inside a chip use it on the terminals internally. Okay, it's a very small amount, but it's there in every single microchip. Every microprocessor has it in there. And the other thing, though, is that, of course, all of that is recoverable, and it's worth it because it's, you know, it's valuable stuff. So at end-of-life recycling, there's actually value there. The way they do it is really nasty, which is why that stuff tends to get sent over into third worlds where no one cares about environmental pollution.
Would you hear Lou 2 weeks ago talking about the people are going through all the old mining entrails at Cripple Creek are making $65 million a month?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that, but the extraction is nasty because you have to use things like concentrated nitric acid. Okay, which is pretty ugly stuff in terms of
they supposedly are doing it all environmentally sound, but boy, why would you like to have a job you made $65 million a month? Your company, isn't that so bad?
That's the thing is that we look at that, but this is when you look at at some of the craziness. The world runs on energy of different levels of quality. Electricity is arguably the highest quality energy that we commercially use on a regular basis. And the higher the quality of the energy, the more it costs.
Are you alleging that this train is supposed to be electric?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so all right, so run this. I know.
So here's the premise.
Listeners, bear with me because everybody knows my fascinating. There's only five ways to get from the eastern part of the country to the west by rail.
Right.
Right. And it's actually fairly close to wherever your interstate highways are. You've got the northern one, you've got the original one.
Well, the railways were built first, but yeah, the Eisenhower system was essentially a defense project, and it was put together as a way to be able to move stuff faster.
But the Eisenhower tunnel on I-70 is 2 miles away from the Moffett tunnel for the train.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, they're all in the same spot. I mean, your road that goes over the Moffett Pass, where all the family ate each other, is right where they put the railroad, and it's pretty close to where Interstate 80 is, right?
Right.
As a matter of fact, you know what's interesting, Carl? I mean, they talk about people that you wonder how these people did this in the old days. When they mapped out the railroad, guys did it from horseback, the surveyors.
Yeah.
And when they mapped out Interstate 80, if you happen to go Interstate 80 west, go skiing or whatever, right next to the railroad. The difference between a satellite mapping and what those guys did is like a tenth of a mile in most spots. That's how good those guys were.
Yeah, they were. They were very good.
So I'm like, okay, but anyway, there has never been a railroad between Vegas and L.A. You got to go down to Phoenix because the Phoenix. Actually, you got to go to Tucson. I mean, Tucson, where the Southern Pacific is, right?
Right. It's Well, that's just because the way the rails. I mean, we're a fairly diverse population and you know centers of where people are, right, across the amount of land we have. This is not like Europe. Right. I mean, Europe basically most of Europe fits inside of Texas.
Right.
So I mean, it's a it's a very different world from that point of view, and that's the reason that the concept of large scale rail replacing cars and airplanes in the United States is a non-starter. The distance is just too large and the density is too low. You'll never make it pay. So the idea here is that there's so much traffic between L.A. and Vegas that if we put a light rail in there, or even a regular size rail, which is basically what they're talking about, is a real one,
But no freight line. It's not going to be a regular track.
No, it's that does two things. Number one, it lets you run much higher speeds, okay? Because freight, you can't do.
I'm not alleging that we should have them on the same track, but if you had a two-track regular main line, you can run your passenger trains 110 miles an hour, and it's only 200 miles. So the idea...
I understand, but you can't run like the 150 and the 200-mile
hour. No, but I'm saying, what do you need to? What do you need to for if you're only 200 miles?
Well, you don't. The problem is that when you have freight traffic on that track...
You should never do that, by the way. We do that here. We should never do that. But
I know. We should have a separate... It should be a separate line. The problem is I don't buy that you're going to get enough traffic on that rail line to make that work.
Okay, so you're going to have to bust through the mountains. So I'm saying why not just have a two-track regular rail line, one for freight, one for passenger, if you're going to do this. And by the way... Put a couple of windmills out there. There is nothing but sun. If there's ever a place to have some electric power, just get a couple of electric locomotives, put them in the front, and go 95 or 100 miles an hour. You're there in 2 hours. What's the difference?
You have to get enough people that will use it to pay, and the turn time, the parking, and everything else on both ends has to make sense economically. This is the basic problem you have with rail in the United States.
I get it, but I'm saying why design something that can't take any freight? Freight's where the money is.
Well, I understand that. I'm just saying that the only way you're going to make something like this work, the only way it makes sense, is if the hassle factor is low enough that it beats me getting in my car. Okay? That's what you have to beat.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And that's always been the problem with passenger rail in the U.S., is that it just with a few exceptions, right? I mean, hey, when I lived in Chicago, I used to take the L to go to the office, even though I had parking underground in my building. Frequently, I got on the train anyway because it was less hassle than having to deal with driving up Lakeshore Drive. Okay, the train station was right around the corner, so I could walk out the door, walk around the corner, dump the token in the machine, and off I go. That's fine. However, the hassle factor has to be lower. And if it's not, you'll get no riders.
I don't disagree, man. I did this. You can believe the studies we did at Pullman when I was there. And a lot of it hasn't changed. Real quick, Hal can wait a second. Because maybe he'll like this story. Did you ever do the Sunday morning drive from Vegas back to L.A.?
Oh, God, no.
Hilarious.
A lot of people do.
It is hilarious. Yeah. I was in Vegas to do a seminar, and then the CBOE wanted me in L.A. to do to speak at another thing when I was on the board. So I actually did the get up at 6 o'clock in the morning in Vegas, or 7, whatever the hell it was, get my rental car, and they paid for the rental car, and I flew back from L.A. So I get in the rental car, and off I go. Now I had to get gas, so I pull in the gas station. Carl, there's got to be 100, I'll use the term zombies, walking around the gas station, grabbing like the hostess ho hos and the chips and the pop. Half of them I don't think it even slept. Everybody's hungover. Everybody gets in the car and you're going. It's the worst drive ever. Both lanes it's like you're on the Dan Ryan. Both lanes are loaded with cars and everybody's going 80 miles an hour. So I mean, you can't take your eyes off the road a second. So all of a sudden it's down the road and now you got your coffee, you got to find a men's room, right? So you pull off and now everybody's doing better. So the McDonald's and the Burger King and those places are jammed as everybody's getting their munchies. And everybody piles back in the car. And there's radio stations in all these little towns. And all you do, it's an AM station, and they know everybody's coming back from Vegas to L.A. So whenever you go over a mountain range, it's another little 1,000-watt thing, and all you do is hit the seek on the AM, and it buzzes to the next town, and it's the same guy.
Oh, my God.
So this is like all the way. And finally, when you get almost there, it's like a 3.5-hour drive or more. And then you can just see people are back to somewhat normal. But the first two stops are hilarious.
You know, if you could turn that into 2 hours and it wasn't $50 a crack to park on one end or the other, okay, and the rest of the hassle factor wasn't there, and you actually had a schedule that made some sense, it would work. The problem is you'll never get there. With all the crazy corruption you have when it comes to these things.
When you have the 110-mile-an-hour stuff right in front of your nose, you don't need to go 200 miles an hour. Plus, what's this thing going to look like? There going to be tunnels and stuff? Let's talk about this on Friday. By the way, Friday, I got a good one for you, Kyle. For hanging around, I'll tell you my strip club story about the lady who took the Greyhound back to L.A. on the midnight run in Vegas.
All right, sounds good.
SP Fuse up 11, NASDAQ Fuse up 43. Very short break. We'll have Professor Hal.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JAX. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjax@live.com.
Let's get it on. It's time to get down.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jax. I'm Tom Howell. Ricardo on the board with some good stuff here. SPV is only up 9 now. And as he features up 32, we're still up, but we're not up as much. Do we have the professor?
Hey, Tom.
Hey,
there?
Sorry we're a little late, bud. But
that's all right.
Once I got started on rails, you know how I am.
Oh, I know.
I'm just wondering why we're doing this now, what kind of mountain range we're going through, and why aren't we doing a freight line with it, and what the hell? I'm just asking, you know.
Well, I would just say that I don't think governments are very, or politicians or bureaucrats are very good stewards of people's money. That's all I got to say.
Well, did you ever?
It's not their money, right? It's somebody else's money.
Well, I'm hot and cold on the replaceable energy, and yet in some areas I don't understand why we don't have way the hell more of it. And when most people have heard, I bought a pickup truck in Tucson one day and drove it home. I needed a pickup truck because my parents just died. We were cleaning the house out and all kinds of stuff. So, plus I'd never driven that. Back essentially about 66, I wanted to do it, and I get this truck. I'm driving across northern Arizona, New Mexico. Hell, it's relentless winds, relentless sun, and I'm looking off to the left, and those are the Santa Fe tracks, the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe, one of the five ways west. And I'm thinking, these guys are using diesel locomotive. If I'd have known a rich professor like Hal at the time, I would have said, look, let me get this straight. I'm going to put up a couple of some solar collectors and a few windmills and drop your train off here, and I'll have electric locomotives and I'll take it from here to California with the electric locomotives, and you can turn around the diesels back, go the other way. The idea that section isn't run by electricity, I can't fathom, because it's right there. And now, have you ever gone to St. Hoover Dam? You probably have, being the...
Oh, yeah. It's impressive.
Well, if you get to the top of the dam and you look up and down, you see the lake and you see the work these guys did. When you get up on the pass, look towards the southwest. There's a flat plain there that is as flat as any table you've ever seen. It has to go for 50 miles.
Yeah.
I don't even think a cockroach could survive on that thing with the sun beating down on it. Why that thing doesn't have 15 square miles of solar collectors with the power wires right there for the dam, I have no idea. You could double the power from the dam. You got the power, you got the wires right. There's not a one. If ever there's a place that you could put a solar collector where every day it's sunny and you wouldn't bother a soul, there isn't a roach living out there. Who would you bother?
Yeah, I think the problem with solar and wind is when it doesn't blow, it doesn't produce electricity, and when it shines during the day, it does, but at night it doesn't.
Well, that's when you need the air conditioning in Vegas and Phoenix during the day, right?
Yeah.
And you got power lines going both directions. Plus, if you had to add a couple of power lines, once you have the right of way, how easy is that?
And there's very, very little clouds out there too.
It's relentless sun. It's relentless
blue
sun. Yeah.
In that part of the country. Yeah.
I bet you have, what do you think, 30 cloudy days a year at most?
Yeah. Maybe what we need to do is figure out how to create they call them batteries. And my wife did a project in her environmental economics class at Westminster University. She's graduating this spring, by the way, finally, with that degree. It's kind of hard to do when you have triplets.
Yeah. Well, you got an older one too, right?
Yeah, she was getting her degree in economics. Yeah, we had the triplets and the older boy, yeah. But she did a project in the class about a natural battery. And I think what we have to do is figure out how to build these natural batteries. And the natural batteries she, I think, talked about was one where during the day, water is pumped up the mountain. And I forget the details of it because it's been a while, but the water's pumped up during the day at night. The water's pumped up at night when the winds come up at night. So wind turbines are powering pumps that push the water up the mountain into a reservoir. And then during the day when demand is high and the winds are low, the water comes rushing down the mountain and turns a water turbine.
Hell,
to create electricity during the peak hours.
I think Commonwealth Edison does that here. I think they somehow have, I don't know if they have an old coal, they got something going in Illinois where they pump water from one cavern to the other at night using nuclear power. In the daytime it comes down and they use it. I'm not sure where that is, but
I think in places where wind is really strong at night, something that like that can be engineered. And they call it a natural battery or something.
Well, right? Remember you don't remember. They were Finkelsteel. They were on Armitage, and then they moved south somewhere on the south side. They needed more room, and plus the area was getting so gentrified, any little piece of pollution, they were all getting pissed off at. So they moved out there, but they've been around forever. I mean, the guy put the place together before World War II, and then they bought some stuff in Germany. They make they made stamping dies. You know what those are. The stuff where you got to pound the hell out of them because you want the stuff so dense that you're gonna, it'll last like a couple centuries. Stamping die. You could do fenders of the same car. Anyway, those guys they had electric hearths. They had open hearth furnaces. They weren't huge, but they were just making smaller pieces of steel. But they ran at night. By their night, Dr. J and I had come in at 4:30 in the morning. We were doing on the score, and you'd see all the flames on at night. In the daytime, they were all down. Because the difference in, you could get electric power from Commonwealth Edison at night for like next to nothing.
Yeah.
Because nuclear things are going the whole time.
Yeah. I think markets need to be freed up here because I think when you get a lot of government planning going on, they build the solar panels in places that you don't want to build a solar panel. And they don't build them in the places that maybe would do the best.
They've got them on farms in Wisconsin instead of places in Arizona. I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, it's a long. Not that you shouldn't have them in Wisconsin, because there's no way you're going to send them over to wires that far. But
yeah.
But you know, we were talking a lot about you last week. I don't know if you were, your name was being burned around. I was talking about you with Carl and who the hell else? It was a couple other people. We were talking about when things start to get less and less competitive and less a free market. When do you stop even thinking it's going to act like a free market? Or how do you? I mean, I could probably only name 4 or 5 industries right now that I think are somewhat a free market, and I would put like barber and beauty shops in there. Even though there's a couple of chains, but they're real small. I still would say farming is. I'd actually put oil in there to a certain extent, because there's a gazillion places where people are drilling for oil. There's not very many that you would consider to be, I guess, bars and restaurants still sort of are. After that, I don't know too many that are.
I think the easiest way to figure out where the freest markets are is where prices tend to come down. Quality goes up, and there's no issue with production. When you don't have that combination, it's probably a government-controlled monopoly or a government-created monopoly in some way or another, or a cartel of some sort. So if you see prices falling, productivity going up through the roof, and then you see quality improvements, it's probably a free market. You definitely don't have that in airlines or the FDA or I was watching a video about raw milk, and the extent that the big corporate dairy farm organization, the trade union, whatever you want to call it, the extent that they go after raw milk. I grew up on raw milk. My neighbor had a dairy when I was a little kid, and we would take potatoes from our storage, our warehouse, and we'd leave 100-pound sacks of potatoes in his dairy room, where he a big tank where all the milk from the cows was pumped into this tank before pasteurization. And I remember getting gallons of milk a week. We just drop potatoes off and take milk, you know, in a barter system, and we drank unpasteurized milk the entire time in my youth, for the most part. We drank it. And I think that unpasteurized milk has incredible health benefits. And when they pasteurize it...
How old is it? What's the difference between one kind of... I'm trying to ask a question. If it's unpasteurized, what do you have, like 3 days to drink it? And if it's pasteurized, how long do you get to drink it? Is there a difference?
Yeah, and that's the concern right there, right? If the raw milk is, you know, old, then you don't want to drink it. But when it's fresh like that, it has incredible health benefits. And so what happens with this government cartel that creates this cartel through government policy is the big dairy farms that want to be able to ship milk long distances, they can't compete on taste and health benefits if they have to compete against a local dairy farmer who is supplying very healthful, very fresh raw milk. And so they scaremonger through government to destroy that competition, because they want to be able to distribute long distances, so they have to pasteurize.
Right. I don't know what's the break even? 3 days, 4 days?
I think it's probably 3 days, yeah. I mean, I remember leaving the milk on the table. We'd leave the milk on the table all day long, but it would be gone by the end of the day. And we used to drink the milk warm. My mom would skim the milk, take the cream off the top. She'd let it set on the table and take the cream off the top and make all kinds of nice things with that cream. She'd make butter, homemade butter. But it was incredible tasting. And that's where this stuff comes from, right? It comes from government supporting these massive corporations or their trade organizations and demonizing a product as healthful as raw milk. I don't think the big dairy farmers could compete if they had to go up against the healthful benefits and the incredible taste of dairy.
Well, we had a guy on, Chris brought him on. He there's a place in Indiana, and it's, I think it's Fair Oaks, I mm-hmm. think the name of it. Guy was on, he's the owner, great guest. And hell, these guys are so big. I don't know how many acres. It was more like square miles they had in Indiana.
Yeah.
I think he said something like they had, was it 50 births a day? Something along those lines. And here's I don't know, are we going to do this to people too? They somehow messed with the DNA. I don't know how the hell they did it, by diet or something, where instead of getting 50-50 male and female calves, they were, I think he said, were up to like 65% or 70% female.
Oh, man.
Yeah, imagine if that happened.
Well, hey, in China, the male kids are valued, right? And in dairy farming, female calves
yeah.
are valued.
So, okay. But anyway, he was, somebody asked him, Chris asked him, why does organic milk cost so much more? And I think he said it was a difference of like 60 gallons a week or 45 gallons a week you get out of a cow.
Yeah.
It's a huge number. I mean, don't call me because it was several years ago, but it was like an amazing difference in the amount of milk per week you got out of a cow, one was yeah. organic versus not. So it makes you wonder what the hell is in the other stuff.
Well, the organic milk is great and it tastes good. It's probably the grasses that they're feeding those cows, but again, it's pasteurized, so you lose those health benefits.
But they don't give them whatever they give the other cows to produce more milk. It's more the chemical piece of it than it is the chow, I think.
Well, I'm sure they probably use a high quality. I noticed a difference in milk taste. When I came from Idaho and Utah, we lived in Idaho and Utah since 2013. We came to New York in 2022. And there are some milk brands in New York City at the bodegas and the grocery stores that really taste good. And I think it's because the cows in New York State are probably eating some really high-quality grasses
maybe
in the upper part of the state.
See, I'm going to have to get this off me. I don't think I've had a glass of milk in 25 years.
You haven't had a glass of milk in 25 years?
Maybe. I'll eat ice cream, but that's about it. And I'll do
Man,
butter.
I probably drink a half a gallon of milk a day. It goes back to my childhood. Seriously.
Somewhere along the line, I just stopped doing it. I don't know. I just never had
it. I don't drink the whole milk, but I drink like 1% or 2%. And I love it.
I'm just saying.
I can't get enough of it.
You'll have to be my taste guy. Hey, you know what I've been trying to do, you know, and I was hoping, you know, today maybe you could help me with this, is I'm trying all the stuff I'm seeing, and listeners send stuff in, and Kevin and everybody else on the show really is good about sending, you know, different stuff that you're on the list for that. You see a lot of things happening, and they all, economically, you can see them all tying together, and I do too. Yet it's I think if you're not in, I'm not going to say I'm in your field. You got a PhD, but I don't. But I have a reasonable economic background, and you see all this stuff tying together. And in the last couple of weeks, it's pretty interesting. One of my, you might have met him when he was up here, an attorney. He was on last week, Greg. Greg was talking about how in Chicago, these big hospitals have nothing but money. And if there's a building available next to them, they'll just buy it. And all the people there make a fortune. And I was trying to discuss, I won't say argue, that there's going to come a point where those colossuses of places that have nothing but dough are going to have a problem, because regular people, I'm going to say even people like me who've done okay, I learned a lot when I had to get this MRI for my back 8 months ago. It was $6,500 to $400.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you could find somebody, you can't get scared. I mean, the medical stuff that's happening now, there's no care there anywhere. I don't know what kind of business it is, but so I don't see how you can build a colossus like a Northwestern University of Chicago built on a pricing structure that's 10 to 15 times higher than what it ought to be.
Yeah.
I mean, and you've got some of these drugs, the one diabetes now is a fatso drug. $1,000 a pop when it costs $4 to make.
Yeah.
Someday, it's not like, I know we're not going to get a president or somebody who says, this is wrong, I'm going to stop it, because they're going to get so much cash in their back pockets that they're not going to do that. But from an economic standpoint, it can't last.
Because what's going to happen is people see those margins, and they're going to come up with a way to offer a service or a product that helps them capture some of those margins.
Right? Pretty hard to fight these fight the combo of medical patents and insurance.
Yeah, well, I think it's fixed in the short run, right? That power structure is fixed in the short run. But over the long run, I think microscopic robots that mind your internals of your body, that fight infections and bacteria, harmful bacteria and viruses, or fight cancers, for example. I think that's just going to explode one day where, you know, we'll be thinking of today's medicine, right, that's trying to be captured and frozen and protected by government regulations and these very powerful hospital organizations through regulatory capture. I think we're going to look back at one day and think it's like bloodletting.
Well, I think you and I agree on that, but I'm saying in the short run...
Yeah, it's painful.
But, you know, the funny part is, you know, Greg was arguing with me regarding Chicago. And I said, Greg, the jobs here are not... He goes, how come these rent prices are going up? And they are. A lot of things that seem really odd to me is jobs are leaving the city, rents are going up. In some areas,
that's inflation. That's well, okay. The Federal Reserve printing money.
Yeah, I mean, but I my point was, at some point, the people in New York that pay $5,000 for an apartment can pay the $5,000 because they're making $250 a year there, where they'd be making $80 somewhere else. Somehow, someplace this has to add up, or else it's not long for this world. So it kind of showed something to me the other day. One of my friends is in the real estate business, go nameless, and it's not Audrey, was renting some place on the north side, and they get like 30 applications, right? And, of course, you know, the person wants 650 credit score. And the new thing now is they want, if the rent's $2,000 a month, they want you to be able to prove you make $6,000 a month. Hmm. So it's three times the rent. And I'm thinking, okay, who the hell can prove that? And sure enough, the guy says to me, well, it's a couple... He's in the medical device business, and she works for a hospital. I'm going, so you can see now how those people then could now outbid essentially anybody with a regular job. But it all comes down to a hospital charging $6,500 for an MRI that other people are paying $500 for. I mean, it all is sort of tying together in a very almost an unhealthy way. I went down to see a Notre Dame game one night, which was years ago, and we all ended up in this bar. Imagine that, you know, in New Buffalo.
I can't imagine it.
No, I can't imagine it either. So, of course, I'm sitting there as all these people come by, and this big black guy comes by, and he'd gone to Michigan and was a star football player. And his brother happened to go to Notre Dame. Now, I'm not going to say any names, although somebody could probably dig and find out. And I was talking to him.
You just identified him.
but he was talking to me about the guy who was doing the color thing for Notre Dame. What the hell was his name? Halfback. He hasn't been done it for a few years now. Nice guy. And he was doing it, and I said, you know, why don't you... I mean, the guy had a great voice. I said, how come you're not doing some, radio work or something for, like, Michigan or someplace? The guy's name was... not Flowers. What the hell was his name? I'll think of it. I said, look at the guy at Notre Dame. I mean, I think he really loves doing that. You know, 10 games a year, you come to South Bend, you meet your old buddies, and you get on the air, you get to interview everybody on the team. I said, he goes, he don't make no money. And I go, okay. And he must have said that to me like three or four times. I said, all right, wait a minute. How much do you think he makes? This is, you know, this is 10 years ago. And the guy says, he only makes like $85,000. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, for me to enjoy myself 10, 11 weekends, then for me to pay to go out there and pay for me to stay, walk around, interview coaches and people and talk to everybody that I used to know, and you're going to pay me $85,000 on top of that? I mean, I'd probably do it for free. I would do it for free.
I would too.
Yeah, I'm saying, and he kept saying, he don't make no money. So finally I said, all right. You've pushed me so far. I got to ask you, what do you do? So guess what he was doing? He was
probably something medical.
He was in the medical device selling artificial hips and knees. And evidently, now I think hospitals are maybe a little more competitive in who they buy it from. But I think in those days, people just paid whatever price it was. They just paid for it because insurance covered it. And I mean, and you could see this guy making a fortune where some other guy, you know, because it's insured. This imbalance, it lasts a lot longer, Al, than you and I think it should. But eventually, I think it kind of... But this combination of insurance and patents and other stuff, this medical stuff, it's here for a while. I mean, and I don't think the rest of the country can afford it. They had some people on the other day. They had this black lady on, and she was talking about on the South Side. They have all these black women, and it didn't really matter. It could have been Hispanic. Could be a white woman that don't have a fortune. The insurance, the way it is, she's talking about how the health care. I think the health care incredibly drops off as soon as you're not in one of these kind of Cadillac plans or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think. I mean, somehow or another, this has got to get straightened out here.
I think it's by design. I think they want it this way because they want the prices to go up so extraordinarily. And then, guarantee you, when it gets to the point where people can't afford it, seriously, they just can't afford it and they're just not getting these procedures, what's going to happen is they're going to blame it on the free market. And so this is all by design, in my opinion. They want to drive this stuff up so high that ordinary people can't afford it, and then they can usher in a single-payer system. And they're going to blame it on the market system. And it's not a market system.
No.
Brother Rod had his teeth. He had to get some implants, right? And he could have done it in Lewiston for about $12,000 about 5 years ago. But he drove down to Yuma, Arizona, and for a week, he stayed on the Yuma, Arizona side. And then during the day, he walked across the border in Mexico. He went to this very fancy clinic and had it done for $1,200. And so you're right. It's about 10 times more than it should be because of all the restrictions and licensing and carteling that government creates with its policies.
Well, but your insurance companies, instead of you would...
Well, they're not insurance companies. They're payment systems, right?
Right, but you would think that they would be sending you a list every month of, hey, if you need an MRI, if you need something, go here instead of here. You know, because we'd rather pay $500, but they don't. They're just as happy to pay the higher end. And I think...
Well, I think they probably get a percentage. I think it's probably like Easy Pass, right?
Well,
EasyPass is a monopoly on the toll system, the payment system, right?
Well, yeah.
Hear how much the tolls cost. Because they're getting a scrape back, right?
I also wonder when some of the people in the building have these policies now where they have to pay 10, 15, 20% of the bill.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm accusing somebody of this. I don't trust these guys to not give charging you 20% of the list before they get the discount.
Yeah.
I can't imagine, like, this guy had a hernia surgery.
Well, the out-of-pocket price that we pay, the out-of-pocket expense from our insurance, is probably the maximum we'd be willing to pay, right?
Yeah.
The rest of it is pure rent-seeking.
Well, we got a dash here for breaking a couple of minutes, but this dude, and I'll say it on the air, had a... First of all, if it's on you, it's never simple, right? But it was allegedly was not a double hernia, and he's a single hernia, abdominal hernia from lifting something wrong, and allegedly not a big deal. You know, of course, if it's you, it's a big deal. But and I think the price to go somewhere to just get it done was somewhere around $4,000, $3,800, somewhere in there. Yet to go to one of the regular hospitals, his price was going to be, out of pocket, was going to be like $900 or $9,500 because he had to pay 20%. So he had to pay a $5,000 deductible, so he had to pay 20% of the rest. So it was like $4,000 for his part of the 20%. So you multiply that by five because they're paying the rest of it, allegedly. I don't think that insurance company was really paying $20,000 and him paying $4,000.
Yeah, I don't think they are either.
I bet that they're paying a lot less. But you know the weird part of this, Hal, and I'm supposed to be Mr. Numbers guy, he says to me, calls me big guy, hey, big guy, what should I do here? And I went through the numbers, Hal. These guys are so, I would say clever instead of thieves. I couldn't advise them on the difference. Now, you might ask me, why the hell is that? Well, because the number was so close, and plus it's March, he's getting this done, right? Now, at least if he paid the $9,500 or $10,000, whatever they wanted, he was eating up the rest of his deductible. So if it would have been December, it would have been easy to say, go pay for it for $4,500 instead of giving him $9,500. But early in the year, what happens if the kid's playing soccer and breaks an ankle, and now he's got to pay the deductible again?
Yeah.
You don't get, the numbers were so tight that somebody who knew the drill had to be putting the numbers together because it was almost a wash.
Well, it's kind of like those restoration outfits where you have a flood in your house.
Yeah.
And you're a condo, and the condo insurance has a $5,000 deductible. So you buy an insurance from like State Farm or Allstate to cover the $5,000 deductible, which itself has a $250 deductible, right?
Yeah.
Well, here comes the restoration company, and their fee is $4,700.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Just right below the $5,000 deductible, right? And they only submit their information to your Allstate because they're not going to get any money from the HOA insurance company, right?
Well, we got way back, my brother was really good at this stuff. For the PTI people, we had one of those health savings plans, right? Not the ones that, that run out of gas at the end of the year, the ones that you keep forever, or like another IRA. Yeah. So we put this thing together, and you're putting in there. Of course, there was only one bank that did it, which made it not so competitive. So I'm putting money in there for a couple of years. I got like 15 grand in there, and I'm thinking, hey, this is great. This is going to be like another IRA. All I got to do is like not get sick, right? So over the next 3 years, I have like three issues that turned out to be nothing, right? Thank God. But not that I wanted to be something, but I had to go get three MRIs, you know, like on a knee and something. And every one of them, if your doctor sent you to a specialist who sent you to Northwestern for the MRI, it came out, because what happens at the HSA, you get to put money in there, but now your deductible is $5,000, right? Which was used to be a lot of money 10 years ago or 15 years ago. So in 3 years, I went from $15,000 in my HSA to like $80. Every one of them, the specialist and the MRI was like $48.90. The insurance company never paid a dime. I mean, these guys are so good at this. SP Futures up 12, SP Futures up 44. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now,
right now. Hello, everybody. Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricardo on the board. We have Greg Pappas in the studio. Hal Snar with us. SP Futures up 13. NASDAQ Futures up 50. We're still up. Down a little bit from when we came in, but we're trying to do it 2 days in a row. And like Joel was saying earlier, it's a real big day to come off six in a row and have a big kickback day yesterday. Some of it, a little bit of easing in the Mideast. I think a little bit. Obviously, nothing, no easing in Gaza, it doesn't appear. But anyway, the tension wasn't as ramped up yesterday as it was last week. So that was part of it. Certainly probably caused the gold and silver to go back down. We've got the Dow futures up 48. Good earnings out of GM, up 209 now, 45.30. It's up almost 5% over in Europe. Got rallies here too. I mean, everybody's kind of a little bit of a relief rally here, although these guys are not up as much as they were. DAX was up over 200, now it's up 150.8%. The FTSE's actually turned down a buck, so call that one flat. And CAC rounds up 25.3, so the FTSE actually hit a fresh record high and then turned around a little bit. For Asia, we've got a Nikkei up 113.3%, Hang Seng up 317, and another 2 days in a row of a big bounce. It's almost 2% again, 16,828. Shanghai, however, is down 22.7% as they continue. You almost think they're trading like They weren't traded at the same time, but every day now it seems like one's up and one's down. Yesterday we had a big rally, Dow up 253, S&P up 43, which is probably at least two-thirds of the loss on Friday. NASDAQ, however, was down 3-something on Friday, only made 169 yesterday, so about half of it back, maybe a little more than half. Bonds up 2 basis points now, 4.64. The Bund up 2 basis points, 2.52. Japan down 1 basis point, 0.85. Oil down 72 cents, 81.18, so a little bit of pressure off the oil. It made it to like 85. Brent down 65 cents, 86.35. Natural gas unchanged, 178. RBOB down 3 cents, 265. Gold had a huge, horrible day yesterday. Down another 24 bucks today. It was down like 60 yesterday. 23.21, so a long way from 2,400, but still pretty high. Silver up down 20 cents, 27.04. And we've got the dollar is still 106.7 against the euro, which is quite a bit stronger than it was a few weeks ago, but even more so against the pound. 123.9, it was 127 there for quite a while. And we've got Bitcoin down 346, 66,050. Carter, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Sox lose again.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 a.m. right here in beautiful Chicago. We got a high, 59 degrees Fahrenheit right now, and a high of again 59 degrees Fahrenheit. Cloudy skies this morning, followed by scattered showers and thunderstorms during the afternoon. Gusty winds and small hail are possible. Winds southwest are at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Chance of rain went up 10% since last break, with a chance of 50% right now. In Phoenix, we have a 97 degrees Fahrenheit right now. Very, very hot, with a high of 97 degrees. Sunny, and the winds south-southeast are 10 to 15 miles per hour. On the traffic, we got inbound Kennedy from Montrose is going to be 32 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook is 57 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 42 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from the 95th is going to be 31 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is going to be 38 minutes. Another quick thing, apparently there's a closed road from North Milwaukee to I-90 East, so be on the lookout for that. On the sports, the Suns and the Timberwolves are going to be playing today at 6:30 p.m. at the Target Center in Minneapolis. The Sox lost, as you said, Chief, to the Twins 7-0 in Minnesota, and the Diamondbacks lost to the Cardinals in St. Louis 5-3. Also, the Bears are announcing plans for new stadium and additional green open space on Museum campus tomorrow, Wednesday, April 24th, and it's going to be right in the parking lot of where they are right now. That's all I got for you, my friend.
I don't even want to go into that. We'll talk about that one of these days, Ricardo, but that... That is such a horrible idea. I can't even... giving these guys more money, I can't even... Like, oh, God. Oh, God.
You know.
Hal, it's... Hal, has there been a stadium? I mean, you were in Salt Lake City. I have a file here from some person who did all the studies of Salt Lake City. They built, like... cities helped with three or four things there for basketball, for AAA, for other stuff. Every single one of them was a fiasco, right?
You know, I don't really remember that. I know the Maverick Center is a place where they play hockey. You have the soccer stadium down in, Sandy? On the east side of the interstate. And then you have the Delta Center. Those are the three major venues. But I wouldn't be at all surprised. I think they were built prior to us moving there, so I'm not really aware of... But I suspect it probably had some. It was something similar to the 2000 Winter Olympics. Remember that fiasco?
Yeah.
And Utah does have. I think Utah. I heard this at a presentation when I was at Westminster University. Utah is, I think, number one in the rate of white collar crime in the United States of the states. It has the highest white collar crime rate, and I think it probably has something to do with the fact that. You know, the voluntary clergy in the Mormon Church, which is very powerful, probably exerts a lot of trust over the members of its congregations. And I find this really interesting because when we were going to church in Greensboro, North Carolina, my wife and I went to a Mormon ward for a while. We also went to a black church. But one of the guys at this Mormon church was the author who wrote Ender's Game. And he said he liked going to church in Greensboro, North Carolina, because people don't go to church for business reasons. So what you said does not surprise in the least bit. Well, about the Utah arenas.
Utah Well, I don't know if you want to hear this. There was a thing on the History Channel, and as you know, I think you do the same way. I'm not accusing you of watching the same show, but a lot of times, if you want to learn about economics, you need to learn about industries that maybe are outside the law a little bit. And who was the guy from the University of Chicago that wrote the book on? This is about, God, it's had to be like 10 years ago, maybe 12. He wrote the book on how the gangs were set up as a successful business in terms of hierarchy and the people, the thing where you got the little spikes coming out where who's in charge. What do they call that? The headcount or the power chart or whatever you want to call it. And how similar they were to some businesses and how effective they were. But there was a thing on the History Channel regarding the history of pornography, and it was fascinating. And first of all, the mob was involved, and you had the little 8mm stuff with all that kind of, the reel going way back. And then it broke out into essentially the mainstream as the Supreme Court said you can use, what was it, local, that was the term they used? Local standards, right? I think it was local standards. So all of this is back in the 80s. You started getting all these adult bookstores all over the place and all this kind of stuff, which you don't see anymore, I don't think.
The competition was too great from the internet.
Yeah, the internet kind of put them out. But so somebody opens one of these adult bookstores right in Provo, Utah. and of course they got this, shall we say, spatially challenged lady attorney general who's all over this thing. And she can't wait to close it down. And she's using this, community standards was the name of the thing. So they go to trial, and this guy's representing the porn store, basically. And he's getting his ass kicked at court. I mean, he's got no chance. Finally, he comes out and he looks out the window and he sees this. I don't know if it was a big hotel. I don't know, whatever. I don't know which one it was. If it was Hilton or whatever the hell it was. And all these hotels. I mean, you could always. I mean, I never did it, but you could rent the bad movie on your machine, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of couples used to go do that. I mean, from what I understand, I never did it. And so the guy goes, boy, I wonder. This community standard. So he's got a buddy, wherever it was, Hyatt or Hilton, calls the guy up and he says, hey, can you find out how many out of all the rooms they sell every night, how many rooms actually rent an adult film countrywide? And the guy says, sure. And he comes back and he goes, that Hyatt or whatever it was, it was like two or three times the norm. So evidently, I don't know if the people there were more. So everybody, instead of doing anything at home, they're racing here and having a night with the wife, I assume, and renting the porn flick in the room, right? So he comes back in with these stats and he goes, Judge, I kind of agree with you. This really should be a community standards thing. By the way, you have a different. This lady has a different view of her community than what her community really is. And he puts all this stuff out there. The guy wins. The judge. I was fascinated by it. He goes, yeah, but you don't have an idea. You think this is what your community standards are, but they aren't. here they are. And the guy wanted the place stayed open. Who knows how long it stayed open? But anyway, what do you make of what's happening in Chicago? There's a couple of schools here, universities have been around forever, or colleges. I don't think they're that are all of a sudden have all kinds of money problems and declaring bankruptcy and doing stuff with telling people that are tenured professors they got to rework the deals and stuff. Is that countrywide or is that just here?
Well, I think it's everywhere, I think. I mean, when I was at Westminster University, we had issues like that, and I survived probably two or three faculty layoffs. And I wanted to stay, but my wife wasn't happy, and I took a position at a small liberal arts Christian university in that was in Nyack, New York, but it moved to Lower Manhattan. And to make my wife happy, I took the job to lead their business program. And 8 months later, they closed their doors. So I think it's happening everywhere. The small liberal arts colleges, and I think it's worse for the small liberal arts colleges that try to be a mini university. I think the small liberal arts colleges that, they take advantage of exploit their advantages, and their advantages are small classes, have a diversified a real traditional liberal arts education where you had to dabble in all these different disciplines instead of being highly compartmentalized like they are in the public universities. I think the ones that do the traditional liberal arts university instead of the mini university, I think the mini universities are the ones that are really in trouble, the ones that try to do too much.
What's like an example of that school?
Well, I think like Hillsdale College, I think it does a really good job. The one in New Mexico, St. John's, they have the traditional liberal arts college. They do a four-year program. Every student is in the same basic major. There's only one major, and it's a traditional liberal arts university, right? They read the books, the classic books. They all do calculus. You know, they just have this real wide, broad education, and it's not compartmentalized. And these small colleges that try to be small universities, small R1 universities, you get a lot of fighting. There's a lot of rating other programs, right? It gets toxic where, you know, you're trying to recruit from arts and sciences, and arts and sciences is trying to recruit from economics, and economics is trying to recruit from marketing, right? It gets vicious. And I think that's where you're seeing the problem, the biggest the problems, is these little teeny arts and liberal arts colleges that are trying to be mini public universities.
Well, does it matter whether they're downtown or whether
they're straddling?
Does it matter whether they're downtown or, I mean, Columbia down here is having some trouble because Eric was the one who told me about it, and Eric might be coming on list next week again. We haven't had him in a while. He said, "Yeah, they were." A lot of communication stuff. You can learn how to do voiceovers. You can learn how to do, all this stuff. As a matter of fact, what Ricardo's doing right now, you can learn all that stuff at Columbia and things like that. Is it just because?
You can also learn that. You learn how to do that stuff online too. You can kind of figure it out for yourself. There are ways to learn those skills outside of the college too. But I think the rural ones, like, you know, the ones that are in rural neighborhood areas have it hard. They might have lower cost, but I think it's harder maybe to get enough people on those campuses. But the ones in the inner cities, I think they have enough, maybe they have enough kind of like people in the area to get butts and seats, but the problem they have are the cost.
Yeah.
The cost is much higher.
Kevin just tweeted in that Drake and Valparaiso they're discontinuing a couple of majors, and Xavier's having problems too, so it is kind of... Like,
well, West Virginia had a big, huge revamp, I think, over the summer, where they dropped like 30-plus majors.
Really?
So even the state universities are having issues. I think what is happening is there's a bubble in higher education where all these liberal arts colleges and state universities popped up everywhere. And it was okay as long as, you know, baby boomers were having kids, but the kids of the baby boomers, they're just not having as many kids. And so even though the population in the United States is growing, the number of kids enrolled in high schools is shrinking, and the number of those kids that are interested in college is shrinking. So you have all the, you have pretty much weak demand everywhere. And I think these universities, universities like Columbia and Yale and Harvard and Chicago are probably going to be fine. But it's the small liberal arts colleges that are going to have trouble. And I think the public colleges are going to have trouble too, because if they're on a model where their revenues are based on enrollment, they're gonna also see less and less contributions from the state, so they're gonna be probably in trouble as well. Demand is weak, and there's a lot of supply.
What'd you make of if you were listening on the conversation, Edward Joel, because he was out last week, and Aaron came on. Bright guy, works for the same place, Benzinga, and he was on, and he's you know, unemployment's low, economy's doing great, everybody's getting a raise, market's going to the moon. I mean, and there's a kind of a lot of that going on, you know, and I see stuff kind of under the radar, to the point where I've never seen it so much under the radar, and I don't want to just be doggy downer, but how are you matching up the fact that, I saw last week that the median wage for a full-time employee now is starting to push $53,000. Yet the median wage overall is still under $40,000. And that gap appears to be what Kevin and Carl keep talking about, is less and less people are getting this 40-hour week. I mean, how do you tie that together, Ken? I mean, it seems like everybody wants to get down to the number where you don't have to provide the insurance and the vacations and all the other stuff, and yet, you know, a guy my age, if somebody says I make $50 an hour, which is nice, I'm immediately going to go, well, that's $2,000 a week. But evidently, I can't do that anymore. It's not, you don't get to 40 hours. You don't, you know, that type of thing. I mean, how do you, it seems like the population is sliding two different directions. And
yeah,
I can't put my finger on it. But I know, I can see it, but I can't explain it enough to win an argument ever. Let's put it that way.
Well, I think what's going on is you see it in the household data and the household survey data where they calculate the unemployment rate. And you see it in the payroll survey, the establishment survey. You see payrolls rising. Then now the first set of every month they release a new set, right? But then they're revised lower, and then the second revision they've been revised even lower. So there's a bias toward inflating the number, and then I think they become a little sane in their first and second revision of those employment levels from the household survey. So you have but you have a bifurcation in what the household survey is saying and what the payroll is saying. And then I read this survey that I tweeted about a month ago about 46% of Americans having a second job. 46% of workers having a second job. And I was thinking about it, and I think what's going on is firms don't want to hire full-time employees because the law says they have to provide them with health insurance. So one way to get around that is to hire two part-time workers, and then you don't have to provide those two part-time workers with health insurance. And you saw this with adjuncts. Before the Affordable Care Act, an adjunct could do pretty well at one university. But as soon as the Affordable Care Act came about, as a response to it, what universities started doing is they started scheduling their adjuncts for fewer classes, and so the adjuncts had to scramble and find sections at multiple universities within the city. So I think there's a lot of layers to this. I think that's a big component of it, right? Firms kind of cut costs. If you go back to General Motors earnings and revenue that you're discussing right after the break, General Motors earnings beat expectations, but its revenues missed their mark, right? Why? Well, when earnings beat expectation but revenues miss, that probably means that they're cutting costs. And what are they doing? They're probably cutting labor costs, right?
Well, they don't have much labor costs left. I mean, in terms of
looking for cost savings, right? That's how revenues miss but earnings beat. They're looking for ways to cut costs. And if they can cut labor, they're going to probably cut labor.
Well, right? What are they down to, 35 hours a car?
Yeah. Well, but there's still labor in that car, right?
Well, I'm saying, but you're down to 35 hours. And in a car now that
I also think maybe they have this massive inventory, and they're trying to work off the inventory too, right?
Well,
so
yeah.
That's why you're going to see, you have these cars that were made that weren't selling. The electric vehicle demand is way down, so they're probably
what's going on with that? I mean,
Hertz. I think the people who wanted to buy an electric vehicle have purchased it, and the people that are not buying an electric vehicle that don't demand them are probably people that take road trips, probably have pickup trucks.
My brother's all over this because he's got a bunch of investors that really were into the that whole area. Where they were buying the people that did the Chargers and all the other stuff. They really wanted. They made like a regular basket of stocks that there were a bunch of guys were all. It wasn't a fund or anything, but there are a bunch of different people that happened to be PTI clients that were very knowledgeable in that industry, and they picked about six or seven stocks somewhat collectively, but it was nothing together, and guys pick and chose among the stocks that they all kind of interchanged among each other. And it's been really tough the last few years. I mean, Ford decided, to come with this all-electric pickup, and I always drive a truck, but from what I understand, the feedback is it didn't do anything the commercial said it did. The idea that you can show up with your pickup truck with 15 guys working at a house all using electric drills and so forth, and you plug it into the truck and you don't care if you even have a generator out there. It was all BS. The truck can't power that. I mean, who's kidding who? I mean,
By the time you get ready to leave the job site,
you can't get home. I mean, the idea that if you go somewhere and you can't, I'm not downgrading the things. I mean, I see these Rivians, one of those. That's the most beautiful truck I've ever seen. But now they're having trouble. I don't think the promise is anywhere near. They're probably really nice trucks, but they just overpromised. I mean, Hertz can't get rid of their Teslas, right? Nobody wants them.
Yeah. And then who's going to, what Idahoan, what farmer, or what rural citizen is going to buy a Tesla truck? I mean, to me, it's the ugliest looking thing in the world. To me, it looks like you don't use it for work. You use it to, put groceries in it to go from Costco to your house. I mean, to me, it's the ugliest looking thing I've ever seen in my life. And I don't see any macho hunter or farmer or rancher ever buying one of those Tesla trucks. I just don't see it, right? I mean, you want your truck to look tough. A Chevy truck looks tough.
So do those Rivians. But I mean, if I was somewhere where I could have some kind of a solar thing or even a small windmill or something, and I can't picture myself a farm guy, but I mean, where if I had a couple of pickups and stuff and town was 10 miles away and I go to town five times a day, and would I have something smaller that I could hop in there that was electric and go back and forth for free? Why not? Yeah. But it wouldn't be, it's not going to replace my pickup truck, but it's going to replace, let the economy, like you always say, let the economy do it on its own as it grows away.
I think what government subsidies did is they encouraged people who want a commuter, electric vehicle commuter, it encouraged them to buy the electric vehicle commuter that they wanted, and it probably rated future electric vehicle sales. Now, all that demand has been satisfied, and so you have no demand left for all the electric vehicles that these companies thought they were going to sell. Because people like me, I can't have an electric vehicle. I take trips to Virginia and North Carolina.
Yeah,
my kids and my wife go to Virginia to go hang out in our motorhome during the summer. I can't drive an electric vehicle down there with six kids and clothes.
The air conditioning and all those.
And people like their air conditioning too. So if you have a long commute or if you have a long road trip, one of the things you got to sacrifice on is probably the air conditioning.
Well, I got to drop you with one. Again, I've had these discussions the last few nights with people or last couple of weeks talking about, the idea of the, I used the example because the lady wrote the really nice article on CNBC regarding the Ozempic charging $1,000 and it costs them five or four or something. Everybody is used to the world where there's always something around and somebody's always got some dough. And I said, we might just reach the point here on some of these, and I think we are in some areas, and this medical stuff where people just don't have the $1,000. I mean, like the Irish say, you can't get blood out of a turnip. At some point, these prices, I think you're seeing people that are at $50,000, the mean car now or the average car. I'm going to tell you, I could probably rattle off 25 people in the ages of 25 to 35 that will never own a new car.
Yeah.
Now, me, I don't want to pay that, so I'm probably never going to buy one. But the point is, I mean, this is, it gets to the point where you have to understand what did Henry Ford say? I have to price my car so the people that work here can afford it. That mentality is totally off the wall now.
Yeah. I mean, who would want to buy a new car that tells insurance companies that you're tailing a car too closely, which drives up your insurance premiums, right? My cars do not communicate with anybody. I got a 2008 Cobalt and a 2012 minivan that have about 100,000 miles on them each, and I maintain them myself, and they don't communicate with anybody, right?
Don't tell me it's a tan minivan.
It's what?
A tan minivan. Remember the commercial?
No, it's a fire engine red minivan.
All right. Remember?
With the tinted windows.
Remember the commercial with all the studs in the health club lifting weights and with the owner of the tan minivan, please go out and move it?
No, it's a fire engine red minivan with tinted windows.
Now, if you'd have said that, then all the guys, that's okay. You go out and get that. But the tan minivan did.
Well, when you got a family of six and you sometimes haul your mother-in-law and your father-in-law around, You need a minivan. You don't. You can't use one of those small electric vehicles.
Well, we went out. We went out skiing one year. A long time. I mean, this is how long ago this was. Chrysler had just come out with the minivan, right? And I look at this thing and I go, "This doesn't look too studly." We had like five people. We had the extra long one. We had five people when skiing. It carted our asses around, all our skis, all everything. Got like 25 miles at a gallon. I'm going. It was front wheel drive, so it was pretty good on the snow and everything else. I'm going, this is a great vehicle. Must have been, and sure enough, how many did they sell over the next? You couldn't say anything bad about the damn thing other than it was a minivan.
Oh, you know, the first Chrysler Town & Country I got,
yeah,
with the foldaway stow seats.
Yeah.
It was the nicest vehicle ever purchased in my life. It was built strong. It got really good gas mileage, and it could haul six to eight people.
Yeah, I mean, as much as you wanted to hate the thing, you couldn't.
I know, and I was one of those guys that said he would never own a minivan until I tried to get my son, newborn son, into my extra cab pickup.
Oh, yeah, good luck with that.
That experience that one time said, all right, the extra cab pickup is gone. I got to get the minivan.
Oh, good. We'll talk at you next week, buddy. SP Futures up 18, NASDAQ Futures up 74. A lot of earnings this week, a lot of other stuff to talk about. Should be a big week on Stocks and Jocks. Back tomorrow for everybody.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.